Well, first, apologies if I've disturbed anyone's day of rest. But at least I know that we've all had a day of rest from the internet. At least I think we have. I have. I don't know. Maybe some people have special devices they can cheat and take away the blessing that Shiva gave us today. I'm sure it won't be the last time we receive that blessing, by the way, until that becomes a permanent one. And I hope everyone took advantage of that to spend the day in contemplation of your supreme beingness and to be free of any traces of attachment to the ego consciousness. Because it's very late in the kalpa, and the time has come for those who wish to graduate to be already in that state of non-duality and to be integrating non-duality and duality until there is no longer any oscillation between the two. I suppose the most obvious reason that I decided I need to teach today to fulfill my responsibilities as a teacher, which in a certain way has no day of rest, but in another way every day is the day of rest, is that Bhavani and Bruce are leaving tomorrow, and this will be my last time to be able to greet them and offer answers to any lingering questions or doubts. And I think Michelle also, yes, is leaving tomorrow. So I want to make sure that you have the opportunity to finish any unclarity so that the path is direct and open and without obstruction and with great wisdom regarding the nature of the flow that is needed to avoid any obstacles in the future, and to not be deceived by Maya's wiles, which are not to be underestimated. So I thought, in fact, I should offer some kind of a teaching on that. And then I remembered that yesterday I did go on the internet, and I saw a number of news articles. That's really all I go to see, but I still do indulge in that so that I can read the phenomenal plane in a way that can be helpful to everyone. Because this is, in one sense, a play, in another sense, a kind of a musical symphony with different themes that go on in each movement and different ways in which a particular note or chord is fractally permeating through the morphogenic field and how to prepare for and take advantage of those waves that are happening in order to accelerate one's journey rather than to be trapped in some riptide of conflicting drives. And so the articles that I read were, the first one was of two British Navy ships, I think it was in the port of Bahrain, one of them accidentally, stupidly, backed into the other and rammed it. How many people saw that article? You know, Britannia rules the waves, no more. This was a pretty major error that should never have happened. And but it confirms what is happening in this moment. And both ships were majorly not destroyed but damaged, So it saved the Houthis a missile or two. And then the next article was of a very highly paid mechanic, a jet plane mechanic in the U.S. Air Force, who was fixing the motor, the engine of an F-35, right, the top of the line, supposedly. And then he went to test it, thinking he'd fixed it, but had absent-mindedly left a flashlight in the engine, and the whole thing blew up, the whole jet gone. So there's two. And then the third article was about all the things happening to passenger airplanes these days. By the way, don't sit next to an emergency door when you fly back. They tend to fly off in mid-flight these days. And then the other article was one that just caught fire in mid-flight. So if you're flying a Boeing, buy extra flight insurance, okay, and give it to the proper beneficiaries. But things are becoming more dangerous. Travel, and that's not an accident. The other article I read was about a summary of what was happening in Davos, Switzerland, in that charade of the World Economic Forum. This year it's pushback theater. And one has to not be fooled by the apparent pushback by two paid, limited hangout cohorts. But although it's not real at the obvious level, it does express a reality of a rupture within the ruling elite that is creating an acceleration in the activities of the currently dominant faction in order to not be overthrown before they can achieve their aims, and to do it in ways that are more extreme than those that have been pursued so far. So this will include, of course, mind control. And the Houthis, of course, are succeeding in shutting off, or at least making more expensive, whatever comes through supply chains from many parts of the world, including, of course, petroleum, but other products as well, and is creating both waves that will affect the economics and the destabilization of the dollar system, but also provide an excuse for the crash to happen and not to blame the banksters. So we're seeing a convergence of a variety of events and of, let's say, manifestations of stupidity, whether on the technical level or on the political level and the strategic and the military, etc. And so there's a certain sense in which it's warning us, watch out for any manifestation of your own stupidity. Not to be laughed at. Okay, well then let me explain a little bit further the metaphysics of all of this. In fact, let's turn it into a module so that at least people can go away with one last teaching. The seven goddesses And the problem of motivation. That's the theme of this particular rant. So, as those of you know who have been around recently, and we've been talking about the Kashmir Shaivite metaphysical diagramming of reality, you know, Shiva has his Trishula, the trident, and we tend to emphasize the fact that he says that there is one goddess on each point of this upward-facing trident, right? Well, that's not the whole story, okay? So I think now it's time for the rest of the story. But let's first of all get those three goddesses out of the way. The one in the central tong, the central, what would you call that? Prong of the trident, that's probably the word. Is para, and then to the left is, well, to the right, let's put that one first. Parapara, and then on the left is apara. The word para, as you, I'm sure, all know from para shakti, parama shiva, etc. Para means supreme, the supreme goddess. This is the goddess who, if you have her favor, will put you into blissful non-duality. Okay? Very nice goddess to make friends with, if you haven't already done so. Very important. And her energies are by the yogis referred to as, let me write it over here. Agora, right? We've talked about the agoris, the yogis. But what agora means is not terrible, not so bad. Lo nora, as the Hebrews would say. In fact, that's an understatement, obviously. It's not just not so bad, it's ultimate good. So, para-para means it's partly para and partly apara. Now, what does that mean? Para is supreme and apara is inferior, meaning it's mired in maya, in duality. It's that level of consciousness identified as an ego in a world of multiple conflicting powers and wills. Parapara, we could say, is the energies of Gora. And apara are the energies of Gauratara. So, we have a goddess who's in charge of bringing you into the supreme consciousness. There's a second goddess who enjoys the duality and non-duality as in a state of kind of flicker fusion. You know, you go back and forth. You enjoy the best of both, right? It's a very gourmet approach. But it doesn't quite let go of the attachment then to the opera. And the opera is when you are totally mired in your ego mind and you believe it's telling you reality, okay? No one here is in that state, but nonetheless, even if you're in parapara, there will be times of fluctuation of consciousness. And the problem with the apara is that it includes the imaginary register, which deceives one's own consciousness into believing you're in a higher state than you're in. And then it slams you from behind at a later point. So one has to be very careful about the games that consciousness plays. Okay, but so how is it that that game then becomes a real conflict when it's obvious that if you're in the state of para and you compare the other two, you're going to say, no thanks, I'll stick with this. All right. So first of all, Abhinavagupta, after he creates this sort of original paradigm, he then says, actually, para is not, the word means supreme, but there is a goddess higher than para who sits on her head. She's not on the actual trident as para is, but she sits on para's head. And this goddess, he gives the name Kala. Sankarshini. Okay? So, if anything, she is seemingly at this point the highest goddess. But what does Kala Sankarshini mean? Kala, time, right? The whole word means the destroyer or the swallower of time. Okay? Now, as soon as time enters into what is otherwise an eternal panorama or tableau, now the swallowing of time creates a different set of forces that begin to operate within the ego consciousness, the level of our consciousness identified with our becoming. So if you think of Kala Sankarshini as eating a piece of a long strand of spaghetti and slurping it in, she's slurping time inside of herself. So as she slurps faster, we get closer and closer to the end of time until we're swallowed up into the singularity that she is, in a way, right? She represents that ultimate death of death, but also death of life, of time, of the whole phenomenal plane. And as she slurps with more intensity and time accelerates, as is happening now, then events begin to vibrate in a different way. Okay? The result of her activation, awakening, or let's say entering with her sponda, her vibrational frequency, into the phenomenal matrix, produces a number of effects. And one of those effects is the precipitation out of these three goddesses, another goddess, it's actually the fifth, because she is the fourth, and this goddess is known as Rodri. Rodri, as you probably can tell, is the feminine form of Rudra. And Rudra is a name for a certain aspect of Shiva. And it's particularly that aspect that governs destruction on the real one plane. But if we wanted to identify Rodri more with more pinpoint accuracy, how I would define her is she is the goddess of oppositional nihilism. Okay? Oppositional nihilism, I would say, is the theme that is now dominant within the fractal field of the ego and of the macrocosm at the global, political, military, economic level, etc. So, but the place that I think we should look at it is, how does it affect you as an ego? Because all of the seven goddesses are aspects that you will find within, right? These are archetypal forces that reappear within every consciousness as a hold-on of the totality. So it's important to ask yourself, is there any way in which your ego mind is reacting to life with oppositional nihilism? And what is it oppositional to? Rodri is oppositional to Para. And she precipitates out because there's a recognition of the coming of the death of the world, and there's a will to go into denial of that, which requires, therefore, one to become stupid, which requires one to be caught in the lower death drive, which causes the consciousness to become cynical and nihilistic and say, what does it matter? We're all one anyway. It doesn't, you know, nothing really matters. And opposes the drive to Jivan Mukti, to liberation, but justifies it by making the consciousness too stupid to realize that it's sabotaging its own highest destiny and making it feel like, no, I'm choosing a comfort zone of the ego that makes more sense for this individual will, not the will of God. But the consciousness here will serve the individual will, identified with the Anava Mala, not with Shiva Shakti, non-dual, supreme, transcendental consciousness. Okay? So, if anyone has any of that sort of thing happening within your consciousness, then the word is beware. Because time is shorter than you think, because Kala Sankarshini is on the move. And the best laid plans of mice and men and egos of every sort oft gang aglay, as Robert Burns used to say. And now the plans are going aglay very rapidly because of the incompetence and stupidity of all the people you depend on, even if it's not your own. Whether it's airline pilots or cab drivers or air controllers or it's just all of the people that you naturally took for granted were going to drive safely on the highway and aren't going to ram you head on and that people are naturally going to behave rationally in every circumstance. And no one is going to have a sudden urge of fury and a kind of a bizarre acting out of some kind right in front of you, or project something onto you that has nothing to do with you. So these kinds of events are happening more and more, and that is part of the theme of Rodri's activity, and she loves it. This is her time, her 15 minutes of fame as a goddess, in which she is dominant over all the others. This is the only time she gets to express herself fully. And how she expresses herself fully at an ego level is it drops your ego into what I would call, from a Freudian perspective, an oral anal phallic narcissistic disorder, okay? Which means that you may oscillate in flicker fusion mode between neediness, hatred because of that neediness, and a desire to dominate in order to undo that, and then to go into denial when that doesn't work, and rejection, if not attack. But there's always a movement of this wheel of karma that is stuck, in the rut of these first three assemblage points. Does that make sense to people? I don't think I need to elaborate on the ego complex at that level. But in any case, that's Rodri's job, okay? So don't think, oh, this is terrible, this is a mistake. No, no. This is exactly what is supposed to happen as part of the play, okay? So as terrifying and horrible as it is, she creates the conditions for awakening. But what's very important is don't confuse the glitches and the stupidities that you make and fall into for the Sadguru. The inner guru isn't the errors, but it should awaken you to the need to connect to the inner guru and not pretend you're already connected when you have no clue and you're still stuck in a level of the imaginary in which there is literally no way out because you've convinced yourself you're already out. All right, enough said about that. The good news is she's not the last goddess. There's another one. Ambika. So now we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Who is Ambika? Well, she, in a way, is the goddess of the upper death drive. She awakens due to Rodri's game against Para, and she sees that that Para is losing, and she realizes that if that goddess loses, I lose, because I will be identified with what will be destroyed and what is sabotaging its own potentialities for graduation. So Ambika then comes to oppose Rodri. So if you're stuck in a wrestling match with Rodri, Ambika will come to your aid if you invoke her and then assist her by not assisting and identifying with Rodri and with the oppositional nihilistic will of the ego not to change, not to grow, not to surrender, not to agree to dissolve itself fully into God consciousness. So that begins another phase of the game. If Ambika is successful in uniting with Para, then that brings the seventh goddess into manifestation. Now, the seventh goddess, I think we have to say, is the integration of all of the other six. How I would write this is, Parashakti Anuttara. Anuttara without the high A is Shiva, is Paramashiva. But Parashakti Anuttara is the unsurpassable. It's that level of the goddess who is in union with Paramashiva and has transcended through the entire swallowing, not just of time, but of meaning, of the divine meaning moreness of the cosmos, and takes that back into the zero point. It's that ultimate annihilation of every illusion of multiplicity, of duality, of separation, of difference from the absolute, which is both nothing and the infinite potentiality. And she will manifest at that moment when the game is over. And she completes it through her final unconditional reunion with the Supreme Source of all consciousness. But it's a reunion that does not disturb the tableau of the game from the level of becoming. It is simply subsumed into the, let's say, the inherent structure of the implicate order of being. So we are right now in that final phase when things are accelerating to the point that whatever we took for granted was the, let's say, the rate of change of the world and of the evolution or devolution of events no longer follows a script based on the normal presuppositions of a politically astute observer, but takes on dimensions of suddenness and of shock that are destined to be both awakening and to be of such an extreme nature that options that had remained open, windows of opportunity, are slammed shut in ways that that will create all kinds of reactions depending on where the game was at for any individual node of consciousness. And so it is a warning shot across the bow, if you will, by Shiva, to show us all of this in a very contracted time frame, so you cannot miss the message. And obviously, it could have been elaborated with many more details than I have thrown into the mix. And because of that, we must actively respond and not be reactive to that situation as a community of yogis. Because if we do not act upon the knowledge that we are fortunately given to be able to read the events and their trajectory as well as our own consciousness, then who can do that? So it is therefore, I would say, a given that Shiva, not we as individual nodes of consciousness, but Shiva is gearing us up for a much higher level of consciousness than we are currently enjoying as a community in order to be able to still be of service rather than being ourselves in a state of shock during this transition. And increased turning of the screws on all worldly hopes, let's say, to use a euphemism, and to present the full power of Rodri or of the Rudra Tandava, And when that's being danced, we should all be in the Ananda Tandava and not be at all disturbed by those who are dancing to a different drum beat. So all of this, of course, as Anuttara would express, is happening within the perfection of the non-dual absolute self. But in the form of this play and this musical symphonic presentation that is coming to its climactic grand finale. And that requires the fireworks of the explosion of consciousness into supreme bliss. And this, of course, is what the Chinese New Year represents as well, but it's the new dawn, the new explosion of the sun of consciousness filling every being with light and power and love and bliss and wisdom. Those who have not attenuated that access to that power by choosing to be collapsed qualium and quantum wave functions. And that means having a fixed identity on the phenomenal plane, because the collapsed wave function casts a shadow. And that shadow then covers the light and doesn't enable the individual consciousness that's casting that shadow to be able to encounter the light fully, because its sensitivity to the light has been contracted through its own focus on the individual plane of desire and fear that always go together. And that this is the nature of the obstacle in a phenomenological sense. So I think that's basically what Shiva wanted me to share with you this evening. And I want to leave time if there are any questions, whether about this or any of the teachings one may have heard throughout your retreat, or that any Navasis may still have. So, do we have a mic?
We're going to pass them around tonight.
Okay, then the floor is open, and put your hand up and the mic will come to you if you have any. There's a...
Thank you very much for this teaching. Not wanting to go maybe in too much detail, because you said that you didn't elaborate as much as you could have, mm-hmm. but there's one thing, and not wanting to be anal retentive either, I'm just thinking that the sixth goddess that you talked about invoking,
Ambika,
what form does that represent in the experience that, like, if one is having an experience between oscillating from one to another, mm. and wanting to ground yourself, how does one go about to invoke that sixth goddess?
She keeps one intellectually clear enough to realize that only the yearning for union with the absolute self will get you out of here and free you from the suffering that will come if there's any identification with the material plane. and to let go of all attachments that you have, because they are ballast. Any attachment to anyone in the phenomenal plane, whether a positive or a negative attachment, right, creates an anchor that keeps one from rising into the transcendental level. So that means you watch out for any guilt complexes or any sense of obligation and loyalty that would create a conflict of will regarding attaining liberation. Ultimately, there should be no conflict, because once you're in liberation, that's the only time you can actually help anyone. If you really want to help those that you claim, oh, I got to stay here for them, the only way is through that. But the mind, if you're not in this clarity of luminous presence of the truth of non-duality, the mind will fool you. So that's what that goddess Ambika does, is the yearning to keep that clarity constant so that you never fall into deviation.
So that invocation is actually just being in the presence, and that will happen.
Sure. But I think there's a reason for saying this is a goddess, you know, because there is a sense in which you may be invoking an aspect of your being that you're not yet identified with as I. And therefore, I can't just simply choose to be a non-duality. There actually must be the reception of some aspect projected out that needs to then return. And it's the invocation is the return, so that that actually does feel like a natural part of your I consciousness, even at the level of the I thought. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're welcome. There was someone else with a question? No? I thought someone else had their hand up. Ah, Michelle, yes. Okay, good. We have multiple
Thank you,
mics.
Shunya.
Uh-huh.
I believe I'm on. That answered really a lot of the question that I had. But when you say invoking that goddess, then the Ambika,
mm-hmm.
when the Rodri is in your face,
yes.
Can you talk a little bit more about that and bringing that goddess within, so then you can create that resonance with the Supreme Real?
Yes. Okay. It means you have to be in real too, which is that of divine love. So the heart has to open to love of God, and love of God that is unconditional. And if it's unconditional, it means you're in a state of total acceptance. There's nothing you're angry about. There's nothing you're fighting against. There's nothing you're objecting to. There's nothing you're wanting. You just are filled with love. And that love wants to surrender your whole being into oneness with the divine bliss of the goddess, the ultimate goddess, right? And you want to do that before time runs out. So there's an urgency, but it's an urgency that brings rest, because the only way out is through reaching such a deep state of inwardness that you have stilled the mind. So there are no agitating thoughts. You're in total peace, silence, and inner stillness. And that's when the journey gets complete.
Okay. I actually have another question. I have made a choice in my life not to, I don't watch the news, I don't read the news. Some would say that that's a kind of being in a state of ignorance, because you should know what's happening in the world. I feel like I find out anyways through the collective what's happening in the world without actually, you know, watching it or being mm-hmm. part of that. Talk a little bit about that, if you
Well, if you will. Are already in supreme consciousness and you have no, let's say, calling to teach others how to read the events, and you are already in bliss, then all is perfect with that. You don't need to read the news. But if there is still some anxiety about what to do and where should I go and all of the questions that egos have, and any kind of a conflict of will of one day I want this, another day I want that, you know, then the reading of the situation of the world out there, which will soon impinge on the world in here, whether you want it to or not, which, by the way, is the reason I showed that movie last night, because that situation after a war is about to happen again. And that was only showing what happened in Kobe, which had only like Dresden-type firebombs going off from the U.S. Wonderful Air Force, not the nukes that hit Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So, but look at what happened, and look at this type of situation, and the death of innocence, and the destruction of a whole society. Now, multiply that by 1,000 times with the next war and how that is going to affect you. Are you ready? Are you in that state in which it won't matter? Even that is not news, because you're already beyond life and death. If you're in that state, then yeah, there's no need to know anything. And when you're at ground zero, if you happen to be there, so be it. The incineration of the bodily form will make no difference, nor the slow death through starvation or radiation poisoning or whatever it might be. None of that will have any significance for the consciousness. But if you're not yet in that state of having transcended to that level, then it may increase the urgency of attaining that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you. This is a very, very interesting teaching. I have two questions. The Rudra and the Ambika, in a way, is that the Nivriti energies kind of being activated, that withdrawal back to the source?
Well, I do think yes. The Rudra is definitely the Pravritti, and it's not only the Pravritti, but it's the moving into Goratara. Did I tell you what the difference between Gora and Goratara? Yeah. So that's extremely awful. That's so terrible that you're in the hands of demonic forces. The other one is like, okay, I can deal with life with its glitches. But Rodri is going to bring you into a world that you will not want to inhabit. That's when you're going to say, Ambika, wake up, wake up. You know, we got to get out of here. And then it gets serious. And when Ambika then reunites with Para, you're out. So yes, wanting to get out, you could say in a way, is the Nivriti wave, like Scotty, beam me up, or whatever that was that they said. So that's when that becomes wholehearted and total until you're out. Until then, it's like, yeah, okay, but I also want to play this video game or eat this pizza or whatever it is that, you know, is preferable to liberation, than that, or any narrative of the ego that you feel, oh, I've got to heal this first, or I've got to understand this, or I've got to tell this person something before I can, you know, none of those narratives, they all have to go. And so it's only when the Nivriti is connected to the Para that then that Sushumna is fully open to transcend the Brahmarandra to the ultimate state where you're actually out of body, even while the body's alive.
That's interesting. I was kind of seeing it a little bit as the Ambika being Chakra One and the Kala Sankarshini as that transcendent. When you say the Sushumna, yeah. I kind of liken it to the Chakra.
Yeah. Yeah, but she's actually more the heart. Because the heart, remember, is the source of the Kundalini movement. It's not Chakra One. It starts at 4, goes to 3, to 5, to 2, to 6, to then 1, and then 7. So it's that spiral movement that gets activated.
Okay, it's interesting. And then, this it's not a metaphor, the image that you used of the spaghetti being slurped.
Yeah.
I was kind of reflecting during the day, because you've been teaching about the archetypes a little bit more, particularly the idea of, you know, like striving for this archetype to manifest itself. It's a silencing of the mind and this adoration for God, so that the archetype can be a part of our being, let's say, becoming.
Yeah.
But the thought came up, and it relates to the spaghetti, because... the archetype still needs to unfold in a linear kind of fashion, or is it the case that you can just jump, like, by resonating with that frequency, let's say?
She comes down fully fledged, fully with her armor and powers, without it coming piecemeal. Yeah, it's immediate.
Isn't there a possibility that the body's not ready for that amount of energy? Like, is there a building oneself up to be able to actually manifest the archetype in its purest form?
There is, but when Ambika becomes activated, it increases your prana. And it's the prana shakti then that creates an energy field that can contain the kundalini shakti as it descends from the absolute into the body and makes the body into a living temple that is designed, in fact, to be able to manifest the archetype. So it's true that the body in a state of having various symptoms, the symptoms physically may correspond to contractions on a monomaya kosha level, but not necessarily. Like Ramana had cancer, right, and all that. It had no effect on the capacity of the kundalini to manifest through his form. In fact, it probably increased, actually. So it's not necessarily the body. It's the qualium wave function that has to totally decollapse and eliminate any trace of identification with the body.
Okay, I'll sit with that. Thank you.
Amrita had a question.
Thank you. Thank you for this teaching. Could you talk a little bit more about the problem of motivation? I didn't catch
that. Oh, well, because of Rodri, you may have every intention of becoming liberated, every intention, quote, because the ego never has every intention to do anything. There's always one aspect of intention that wants the opposite. As long as Rodri is activated, and if you're in the ego, Rodri is having a field day with you all the time, there will be an oppositional aspect that will make all of your best intentions unfulfilled, right? All your New Year's resolutions, they're probably already broken by this time anyway, right? So Rodri is there to oppose your awakening and liberation, but to do so in a way that convinces you that, yeah, that's true, and I'm not sure I believe in all of that, or I just don't have faith, or I just don't have the energy or the desire for liberation. It doesn't mean anything to me somehow. You know, this kind of feeling will come up, and one will buy into it. So the ego is very easily sabotaged and deceived. And so that's why your motivation one day, if you're in the Parapara, for example, if that goddess is still active, one day, yes, I had a glimpse, or you know, I had this opening, or I once had this feeling I knew, or I had this dream that changed me, you know. But then 2 days later, it's all forgotten, and one is back in the mud of Maya. So that's what I mean. The ego cannot keep its motivation constant. It will have every intention of doing X, and it will end up doing Y, without even thinking it was intending it, because it's a subconscious sabotage. And then one realizes, there was part of me that didn't want that, or that fell for the trick, or, you know, was too weak to hold on and stick with my principles, or whatever it was. But there will be some event of of a self-disempowerment.
Okay? That helps. Thank you. Okay. And so in the motivation to go upward, to call on Ambika, comes from the soul? Is that how it gets activated?
She's certainly definitely at the soul level, and it's that level of the soul's purity of heart and of wisdom that wants only to be released from all of one's bondages. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have a few minutes left if there's any other questions or comments. Nirgun.
Thank you, Shunya. Thank you for the teaching and this concept of oppositional nihilism really struck me and made me think of insomnia. Would you say that Rudri insomnia is a manifestation of Rudri?
It can be, just as oversleeping can be, or any form of absent-mindedness or a failure to remember something important in time, whatever. But insomnia can create a dullness in the mind that takes away one's clarity of perception in many ways. So yes, indeed. Okay. But it's not the only trick she has.
No, she has many. Could you say more than about oppositional nihilism? What is that? Like, what do you mean by that exactly?
It usually starts in infancy when one has an oppositional relation to the mother. And one hates the mother but needs her. Now, when the family system was healthy, one would transfer one's loyalty to the father and take on the father's ego ideal and say, okay, mom, I don't need you anymore, and enter into real adulthood. But in the POMO structure, it hates the father equally with the mother. And so because it hates both, it stays in a puer eternus, right, as Jung called it. It refuses to grow up. It becomes oppositional to the symbolic, to learning, to growing, to leaving behind the imaginary, and it prefers a life with its imaginary narrative that whitewashes all the problems and glitches and yet continues them. So this hatred becomes then a hatred of all authority, opposition to God, opposition to belief in goodness and anything that gets in the way of one's own desires and one's own intentions, which are justified as this must be the best thing because I want it, you know. And the ego, its egocentricity becomes such that there is no longer any sense either of dharma or of development of that capacity of intelligence that can critique and deconstruct its egoic narrative sufficiently for the light to get in to give it access to that Ambika energy for liberation. So it becomes a general opposition to law and to anything that would support the development of complete open-heartedness and surrender to that supreme authority, and therefore would bring attunement with that vibrational frequency. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Was there another? Karuna.
You go first.
Yes, I also want to say thank you for this teaching because I've recognized a lot of what you said going on and the sabotage, the subconscious sabotage and things seeming to go well and then the sabotage happens and it's like, wait, how? And then only in hindsight seeing, aha, this is what was playing. So it was very valuable in that sense. And my question sort of relates to it. It has to do with an answer you gave some time ago concerning the subconscious subtexts that are playing that need to be recognized and cleared out in the silence, and how that relates to opening the heart and unconditional love. I guess the question is, which comes first? Is it first that these texts must be cleared out and then there's unconditional love? Or is it first unconditional love that creates a silence that allows this to open up? It's a question that's been arising in meditation.
Well, here's the chicken and egg question again. I think first you have to open up to the desire for truth. You have to want truth. And the love of truth will then give you enough power to be able to overcome the self-love of the ego that doesn't want to reveal its secrets, right? Even to itself, right? Even to its healthier parts, because it doesn't want to give away the game. But the subtext, which is, you know, Hyde versus Jekyll, right? It's that shadow character. Once it is completely unmasked as simply an algorithm, a robotic bot, literally a chat bot that is going on subconsciously in your ego, you will delete that program instantly because it's poison and it's a parasite that's sucking all of your spiritual energy and putting it into Maya, which is both jouissance and, of course, suffering and the feeling of failure and shame of failing yourself. So that eventually becomes too conscious to keep suppressed, and then you can't live with yourself if you let it go on any longer, and then that's usually when you decide to get out of it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Don't wait for that point, though.
I wouldn't want to.
Good. Ah, Bhavani.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I think the part that I'm most interested in tonight is the wiles of Maya.
Mm.
And the word vigilance comes up. How I can navigate with vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
Because it all seems quite, I don't know. It feels a little complex, very complex, mm-hmm. these different
okay,
goddesses.
That's the sign you're in Maya,
right.
Because otherwise it's very simple.
Yeah.
You'll understand complexity, but you'll understand it very simply.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just like the seven goddesses, it seems complex, but it's actually one whole. It's just how you deconstruct all the various forces that make up this whole. But once you are in that state of the whole, then all of those apparent parts become easily understandable and readable without thinking. They're just, you perceive them directly, intuitively. There's a knowing and an action that comes spontaneously. So the trick is to stay without any narratives in a state of inner stillness and peace, in which you feel that divine love and feel no sense of doubt or of any egoic desires or narratives that come up that have to do with an individual being in the world. But there's simply the purity of conscious presence that contains the world and all of those forces of the seven goddesses, but is beyond them and untouched by them. You're already in that absolute state in which all that happens is perfect, and then there will be no complexity. If there is a sense of I'm confused or there's complexity, that's the ego narrative coming up. because the narrative will always come up as a sense of confusion and then an attempt to resolve it in an imaginary level or with an, oh, well, I don't care, or let me, you know, think about it or read my astrological chart or, you know, do something else that will give you some kind of an illusion of an answer but won't bring you into that wholeness. So that's what you want to avoid, is any action from the level of the ego.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And also I would like to thank everyone. It's been a beautiful 6 weeks, and today we got to see a sloth, and I thought that was very symbolic.
I won't interpret that one.
It needs interpreting.
It was wonderful. So I'm very grateful to have been able to be here for 6 weeks. I've been telling everyone that we're coming back, so that must mean something. I think I've been to everybody's house and asked people all kinds of questions, and it's, I don't know. Yeah, now a lot of just fullness. And
that's beautiful. If you are thinking of coming back, and it's more than just thinking, but knowing, right. Don't wait too long.
I know.
Because more doors will fly off the planes and more Ebola pandemics they'll forcibly vaccinate, and more of many, many kinds of Maya external will try to become your Rodri on that level. And you don't want to be caught by external forces of adversity.
Thank you, Shunya. Yeah,
you're welcome. Blessings to you.
Thank you.
And to Bruce, of course. Now you have to say a few words.
A few words. No, I want to thank everybody as well. First of all, Shunya, being here in your presence 30 feet away in these talks is amazing. I love the love streams as well.
Because you're even further away. Further the better, usually.
But this is so powerful. And everybody here, the energy that I've enjoyed these 6 weeks has been amazing. Mm-hmm. And the downloads that I'm getting are tremendous and are helping me to navigate better. And, you know, the route to get back here, as long as doors are still half of the time staying on, I know much better than I ever have before. So, I can't say enough for the love and the energy that's here. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce. It's been a very great joy coming to know you personally. And getting even closer than 30 feet at some point. And I do hope that you'll come back, because you're both very close to not just my heart, but to the heart of the Sangha. And I'm sure we'll all be very happy to welcome you back to stay next time. So blessings to you both.
Thank you.
Namaste. And you also, I hope, will come back. And if not, blessings on wherever you are posted by God to serve in these final days. Okay? And the same, of course, is true for everyone. Some are going. Some will go and return. Some have made a decision not to return. Whatever it is, may that decision not have been made by Rodri, but by Ambika and Para, and be a decision that leads to your ultimate freedom and liberation while the body is still alive and functioning. So you enjoy the full benefit of graduation and the enjoyment of that supreme bliss that can be shared within the illusion of multiplicity and offering of oneself as one's final giving of all that one has to the service of God, which is our fulfillment. So. blessings to everyone for reaching that highest state of holiness and wholeness, and sharing the blessing of that with all that are included in the whole. Namaste.